Hello, 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 drama listeners. As RuPaul and Valerie Cherish from The Comeback like to say, happy Pride Month to everyone, and also happy Tonys Week. We are chronicling the awards on our Patreon. As you all know, we did predictions. We're doing final predictions as well on another podcast that's coming out this week called Backstage Talk, which we'll, of course, put the link all over our social media. But this time is integral in supporting the arts, and we really hope that you will consider supporting our podcast through the Patreon, which is called Drama Plus. So if you do that, you'll get extra behind the scenes Tony's thoughts and bonus episodes and more fun this month of June and honestly year round. Also, you get to be added to our close friends on Instagram. Connor and I are having so much fun. We're coming up on our 200th episode of Drama later this summer, which more of that will be coming soon. And Connor and I just want to say thank you for all of the support that you give us year round. And especially this month of June, where you support these two gays putting on a podcast, putting on a show for you all, it means the world. If you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, it's been a minute since we've gotten one, and it really helps us as a podcast if there's more reviews out there. And that includes the ratings as well. All right, this episode is phenomenal. It includes the director and the playwright of Prima Facie, which is this incredible new play that was on the West End. Now it's on Broadway, starring Jodie Comer from Killing Eve. We have a fascinating, enlightening, and honestly joyful talk today, and I think you all are going to love it. Thank you again, and we'll get on with the show.
Press play. Curtain of an hour in. It's time to taste in
the shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
The option, no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. It is the most wonderful time of the year, Connor. It is the Tonys week. By the time that this comes out, there'll only be, what, 4 or 5 days until the actual ceremony?
That's crazy. I feel like we've been talking about this, well, for a year.
Per yeah, huge, I would you say know, we you have. Know. I would say we have. The new season has actually already begun. There's a new musical and a new play that have already opened on Broadway for next year. But
That's
this will mark
wild.
the end of this time. And I have to say, it has been one of my favorite seasons over the last decade.
Oh, 100%. It's so packed with, I mean, beyond not only new stuff that's been coming maybe from the West End, but new stuff that's been popping up on Broadway, new plays, new musicals, but also exciting replacements and shows that have already been running.
Yeah.
It's just been a really fun time. I think everyone's found a reason to run to the theater for sure.
Definitely.
And we did talk about our Tony predictions. We guested on Backstage Talk, the podcast. That'll be coming out this week. So if anyone's wondering our final predictions before the Tony Awards, you can go check that out. We'll, of course, post it on our socials.
Right.
And then next week, we'll be breaking down our reactions to the Tony Awards right here on Drama.
And the ceremony, which we're still not clear on what the ceremony is going to be, since it's going to be different than years past. It's not allowed to be scripted. I've seen some things going on online that they are allowed to have an outline of what will ultimately be said, but it has to be written the day of. So it's going to be very interesting. I don't know what's actually happening. I do know that Ariana DeBose is still hosting in some capacity. Maybe my dreams are dashed that she's going to do another rap a la the BAFTAs performance. I still
legendary
sing the BAFTAs rap that she had where she sang out the names of Hong Chau, Dolly D, Carrie, and Carrie with a C. All the time. So I am keeping that alive. However,
oh my God.
We do have some very thrilling guests who were a part of this Broadway season. And I can't believe how lucky we got because I'm actually nervous today. I feel like,
oh my God.
I feel nervous because I feel like we are in the presence of geniuses.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we're finding them at very different times and even during different days on the calendar, which is kind of crazy to say out loud, but it's late at night, it's early morning, I'm thrilled that they decided to do this with us. I'm going to read the first person's bio, and then Dylan, you do the second.
I would love that.
So, our guests today are the incredible playwright and director of the 4-time Tony Award nominated and 2-time Olivier Award winning play, prima facie. The writer of this piece, Susie Miller, has a background in law with experience as a human rights and children rights lawyer. She's now a full-time theater writer with award-winning plays under her pen, including Caress/Ache, Sunset Strip, Dust, Sold, The Mathematics of Longing, A Feminist Medea, Reasonable Doubt, Driving Into Walls, and Cross Sections. Susie won the Australian Writers Guild and Kit Denton Fellowship for Writing and Courage in 2008, as well as collected a recognition for this play at the 2020 Australian Writers Guild Award for Drama, the 2020 David Williamson Award for Outstanding Theatre Writing, and the 2020 prestigious Major Australian Writers Guild Award across all categories of theatre, film, and television. Whoa. Based out of London, she's currently adapting it for the screen with Cynthia Erivo as Tess, Miss Miller's work as a playwright, librettist, and screenwriter who explores human injustices.
Joining this phenomenal playwright is the brilliant director behind Prima Facie, Justin Martin. This award-winning theater, film, and television director has been behind the magic of so many of our favorite pieces over the years. Along with his frequent collaborator, Stephen Daldry, Justin co-directed The Jungle Together for BBC Films, starring Man Crush Always, James McAvoy, and Sharon Horgan, and associate directed Connor's favorite play, The Inheritance, Skylight, starring Bill Nye and Carey Mulligan, The Audience, starring Helen Mirren and Kristen Scott Thomas in the West End and on Broadway, and Billy Elliot, the musical. Recently, Justin directed The Lovers, a 6-part series, and worked on seasons 1 and 2 of The Crown, as well as the upcoming Stranger Things, The First Shadow. His critically acclaimed production of Low Level Panic sold out twice at the Galway Theatre Festival before touring Ireland and Australia. Justin has won an Obie, a Southbank Sky Arts Award, and a Broadway World Award for Best Direction. His work with refugees through Good Chance Theatre and upcoming television and film projects are sure to keep his extraordinary body of work expanding. Please welcome to Drama, Susie Miller
and Justin Martin.
Hello.
I'm exhausted. I must just admit.
Hello.
Talk about an introduction.
Welcome to Drama. We are thrilled to have both of you here.
Thank you.
We're so excited to be here, aren't we, Justin? I've woken up extra early. Justin stayed up extra late just because we want to hang out with you guys.
Oh, my goodness. It's an honor. Seriously.
Truly an honor. And I know, Susie, you just woke up, and Justin, you're about to hit the hay. But I'm wondering, we ask all of our guests this to start out our conversations. How are you both doing? Are you well? Ladies first.
Oh, yeah, really well. Like, it's just been such a ride, I have to say. And I'm missing New York desperately at the moment. I know Justin's just been there, but hoping to get back before the show closes.
Yeah, and I'm good. I'm great. I've just had a great day. I've been in a workshop for Stranger Things, and very excited about that. And so, yeah, it's exciting. And I'm always, you know, joyous to see Susie.
Always great to see Justin.
Yeah, I know. Earlier beforehand, you called Susie and she said, well, I'd only pick up for you. So
it's so true. But honestly, I was sound asleep. So I need Justin to wake me up from my slumber. But yeah, no, seriously, he's like my drama husband in a way.
Aw, that's so special.
How did you two meet?
Oh, well, I'll let Justin talk about that one because it's a funny story, actually.
Susie had just arrived in England for a trip with her family, and she came and saw The Jungle. And anybody that can sit through a show when they've got extreme jet lag from Australia and, you know, still enjoy it, it says
with
a lot.
With teenagers.
And she wanted to meet who'd made it, really got into the show, and I think the ethos behind the show, and wanted to meet the people involved in it. And we had a mutual friend who introduced us, but we could only meet on the last day of Susie's trip. And she was on her way to the airport, and I rang her and I said, what airport? And she said, Heathrow. And I was like, I actually am on the way to Heathrow. Why don't we just have a coffee while you're on your way? So she did make it for her flight, but she did delay. She went a little bit earlier, and we were able to have a coffee with all her suitcases in this tiny little cafe. And it was brilliant. I'll never forget it because
I'm an overpacker too. Like, I was worried about how much luggage I had. So yeah, we really were surrounded by luggage.
I'm so glad it happened because I just met somebody that I just connected with on a very human and theatrical level. And if I could do everything with Susie, I would. She's a genius.
And vice versa.
Oh, I can set the scene so perfectly. That first conversation, were there any early seeds planted of an idea or a project or something that you maybe wanted to work on? Or was it this piece we're going to discuss today?
It was this piece. Justin just said, what are you working on? I said, I've just had a show on in Australia. I'm looking, I'm talking to producers, and I told him what it was about, and he had instant incredible connection about the piece, but also ideas that I went, oh, he really gets what I want to do with it. He really gets the scale. He really gets the kind of the impact I want to make with it. And, you know, he just was so enthusiastic. But also, Justin's the kind of guy, like even right now, where he really listens to women. And I felt very heard about exactly what I wanted to do with it. And he got very excited about what was possible with that and just said, you know, I'd really love to be part of it. Let me read it. So he read it. And then I spoke to the producer, who then said, yeah, I want to produce it. I said, I've already got a director attached. It's Justin. And then it was very organic, actually, guys. It was incredible.
It sounds like it.
I love to hear that. Was there any hesitancy? I mean, actually, before we dive into like the specifics about the play, do one of you mind giving our listeners a really quick description of what the play, or like a little tease about what it's about?
Okay. Go, Susie.
Okay. It's about a criminal barrister who is young and savvy and very cool. She's a working class kid made good that's just like brilliant and gotten through law school and is now like on top of her game. She represents everyone, especially people accused of sexual assault, because she's really good at it. And she just believes in the law. And so, you know, you see her in action, and then you see that she goes out on a date that with someone she really likes, and then something really horrific happens and she endures a sexual assault. And she takes it to the criminal justice system because she's the best possible witness. And we watch her go through that system and be completely dehumanized and interrogated and cut to pieces, really. And at the end, there's a sort of call for change. That's probably it in a nutshell. What do you think, Justin? Justin's probably got something to add.
No. Sounds good. That's exactly right.
Well, I would buy my ticket now if I didn't already have one arranged for the end of June. But listen, it gave me chills just hearing about that. And what year was this that you wrote it, Susie?
I wrote it, and it won an award before it went on stage, actually, in Australia. At the Griffin Theatre here. And so they staged in 2019. And then, of course, I went straight to London because I do a lot of work between London and Sydney. And Justin and I had this conversation, and then I spoke to my producer, and which is James Bierman. And then before you know it, was already packaged, ready to go. We were just looking at casting. And then the pandemic happened, which was, oh, great. We nearly got there. And then, oh, hello, 2 years inside in different continents. I got stuck in Australia. So, you know, which you couldn't leave or get back into in Australia. There were no flights. I literally could not get out.
That's right. Because wasn't there like very few cases at the time in Australia?
Because it's an island. Yeah. We just sort of closed off. But you could not. You had to get permission to leave the country. And then there was no guarantee you could come back. But worse than that is there were no flights. You could not get on a flight because no one came or went. Like, so it was real isolation. But, you know, throughout all that time, Justin and James and I, we were Zooming away and doing and casting. We spoke to a couple of people about casting, and then Justin came up with the idea of Jody. And my first instinct was, oh, the woman from Killing Eve. Oh, no way. You know, and then of course, everyone being so politely British, no one asked me why until the end of the conversation, where Justin pipes up in his very gentlemanly voice, well, why not Jodie Comer? I said, well, why would we cast a Russian actor? And he's like, she's not Russian. She's perfect for this. She's actually from Liverpool. We can play with the oral landscape. It's going to be amazing. And I was like, oh, this is a gift. So, yeah.
She's known as being a bit of a master of accent work.
Well,
right?
such a master that I just assumed she was Russian because she does such a Russian accent. So, yeah. Wow. Anyway.
Can you say who else you were thinking of when you thought of this role?
It's complicated because we knew that we wanted it to be a working class character, and there's an authenticity to that that we really needed to think about. So we were looking at working class actresses within the context of England, and it's tricky because obviously, you know, the financial burden on trying to be in the arts when you're working class is complicated. And in the past, there were lots of schemes for that. Particularly, there was a period of time in the 80s where that was really helped along, and they just don't exist in the same way anymore. So it was a smaller pool than we'd expected, but you know, as always, I just knew the right person would connect. I'd never seen Killing Eve until lockdown happened, and for the it was the first week of it, and I watched it and I went, well, I think that's her. She's just inherently theatrical. And then watching interviews with her where she was talking about why she does what she does and the way that she approaches art, I just went, there's something about you that's so extraordinary and special. And I think, you know, you're a little bit younger than what we thought the character was, but the pandemic sort of helped us out in that a little bit. But also there's something about it. And she read it, you know, literally we sent it, her agent read it on a Wednesday. She got it on the Friday and she'd read it and wanted to meet Susie on the Monday. And I just knew the right person would go, I have to do this. Because it is a terrifying prospect going, you know, can I be on stage on my own? And there's no one else. It's just me. And, you know, Jodie has that amazingness. I she's fearless, but she's not. She does get fearful. It's just her way of responding to that is to dive into it. And I'm so in awe
of her. She's courageous. She's courageous and bold. I tell her every day almost. You are the most courageous, bold person. Because I couldn't get up there and do that in a pink fit. Could anyone else?
No. I have no idea how she did it.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best performances I've ever seen on stage in my life. I mean, you both probably agree. And you helped her. You got her there too. I mean, I seriously was in awe. She started and I think I was buckled in on the ride for the entire experience. And there's some incredible, I mean, the direction is phenomenal, Justin. And I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it yet, but there are the way the set is used and the way she gets to sort of like play with the room and that very fabulous effect that comes in about halfway through really just elevates everything. And bravo to you both on such a wonderful piece. And I really think everyone, if they can see it, needs to see it. And will the filmed version be available to see at all again, maybe in the States at some point? Do you know?
The NT Live?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, Susie's in the process of making the film. And I think once it goes to that, I mean, it's available for all school kids within the UK. And that's something that is an initiative that Susie was very behind. And I think was really important because for us, it's you know, I mean, what the thing that connected us really was that a naive belief that theatre can change the world. And that we established that at that first meeting that we met and that our interest in that and in the ways it can do that. And so that's always been it, like the jungle, the play asked the question and we wanted to make sure there were answers. You know, we don't have the full extent of what the answers are, but we wanted to give a space for people who were going, okay, what now? And we did that through the Schools Consent Project, which is an initiative based in the UK that's just moving into New York, which has been a sort of phenomenal thing about getting into barristers who from a similar background to Susie going, I want to, you know, I do this for a living, but I want to talk about it and I want to help bring change because the system doesn't necessarily help me. How can I do that? And so these young barristers of all age going into schools and teaching kids about what are the actual laws of consent, because that's not really taught. And then, but they're even, you know, more recently, it's like there's a law called the Tessa Law, which they're trying to push in through the UK. And then every training judge in Northern Ireland will have to watch the film. So we're trying to find different ways in which it's available to the next generation or, you know, in any way that it can help and sort of bring about change, I suppose.
Yeah, it's amazing that stuff happens.
Your goal that theatre can change the world, that it's happening. And hats off to both of you.
No, I was just going to add in that, you know, like you talked about, like that very first conversation with Justin, his theatrical language was exactly my language. And then he went away, read the play, and his thoughts for it were so right on. But the two things that you've mentioned, or at least one that you've mentioned, the halfway mark staging event, and then at the end, there's something quite phenomenal that happens with the stage. Both of those, Justin spoke about, and that very first conversation after he read it, they were his insights and his theatrical language for the show. And they are brilliant. I mean, they just said, you get it, you get it, you get it. I love it when a director comes to a play and adds a level of genius that's not in the play, but is inspired by the play to emphasize what the play wants to say and to emphasize it in a sensory fashion, which is what directors can do so brilliantly. And I think both of those events on stage were Justin's genius. And, you know, for me as the playwright, seeing that come to life, honestly, I think I was more thrilled by that than anything else in my life, just watching those two things come about and the staging process come together.
Mm. I can imagine the elation you would feel because I'm sure that in creative processes, sometimes you have to sacrifice bits of your vision or your dream in order to make it actually come to life. And to have it be elevated in that way is probably lucky.
It's rare that a director at first read already has those insights into, I know what you want to say. You want to say how many other people this has happened to. You want to say how vulnerable someone is at a certain stage. And I think both of those events, aside from the whole staging, which is phenomenal, and, you know, great designers working with Justin, who he chose to work with, have done a phenomenal job. But I think just the fact that he had those insights upon reading the play for the first time and that he could articulate those to me just made me realize that we communicate and we're seeing the same thing just with different lens, you know, like he's seeing it. Also, it allowed me to have a conversation with a man about the themes in the play. And, you know, it's the sort of play that you were like, everyone says, oh, why was there not a woman director? And I went, has this director got it? And we started a conversation that opened it up to young men as well as young women. It actually is a conversation that women need to have to actually be able to process narratives, but it's also a conversation that men need to be part of, because without them as part of that conversation, the scenario doesn't change. Like, it goes on and on. They don't see something that they can't unsee. And I think you'll recognize that's a bit of a line from the play.
Yes. I think it's on the merchandise too, right?
What are you talking about? On the book.
Anyway.
I'm curious about the inclusion of self-esteem and the soundtrack that was written to be a part of it all. Whose idea was that, and when did that come into the play?
So James Beerman, our producer, put together a list of composers that he thought might be interested, and we talked about what we sort of were looking for, and I knew a bit of her work, but I didn't know her particularly well, and I listened to it straight away, and there was a rhythmicness to it that felt very connected to this what I felt the show needed to feel like. And then listening to her album, you just went, well, you know, she's talking in the same world. She's a working class woman from outside of London. This feels like it's perfect. And I spoke to James, and James went, that's who I want it to be. We went, okay, well, let's meet her. And then he had a hilarious meeting with her manager, in which she kept popping on going, I want to do it, and then leaving. And her manager kept going, what are you talking about? We just want to talk about it. And she kept, so it was a very, it was just, again, it's like, I always think, I mean, she read the play and went, I have to do this. This is what my album's about. And so it was sort of just an understanding of the play and what it wanted to say and the way in which it did it, And so we had a lovely time with her, because she came in with a sort of brilliantly suspicious perception of what theatre can be when it's bad. And there's certain sound effects. She's like, if you make me do a sound effect like this, I will not be doing it. I'm not going to do the sound effect, because certain people will know from other shows. But she was exactly right, and she found her own way through it, and it was sort of such a joy to watch her just, you know, read it, respond to what we talked about in regards to what we thought it to be, and then make this thing. And I remember her sending her the second song. She sent the opening one, which is the beginning of the show, and then the one about mum. And I just, this is it. It's perfect. You know, what you're doing is right. You totally get this as well. So it was just a lot of like-minded people coming together, and then a whole group of my mates. Like, that's what it felt like. Group of mates coming together and making a show.
And like, I can just add about Rebecca there, Rebecca Lucy Taylor, who is self-esteem. I mean, she's become one of my best girlfriends now. I just adore her. Like, she's just the biggest heart and the biggest enthusiastic, life-loving person. And she's just everything, you know. I just sit with her in the theater and we just cry together and hold each other's hands and like laugh at the jokes. And she's just also, I don't know, she is what you see is what she is. She's just this big, fabulous kind of like personality. I love her.
She just wants you to karaoke all the time, which is really intimidating.
Because she's such a great singer. I know. It's like, no way am I singing with you. Yeah.
I really want her to, I mean, she's starting to get known in the US, but I think the US will just fall in love with her, because I think she's speaking a language that transcends it all, but she's doing it in a very entertaining way.
I don't know if this is going to be the case, but I hope that the music is part of the film version with Cynthia Erivo that's going to be happening, which I'm curious about, Susie. When did this all happen, this idea to turn it into a feature film?
You know, when the very first time the show went on in Australia, the film rights were sold straight away. So it's been happening since then. And, wow. You know, and we've just held back on any release because we just wanted, I wanted to really enjoy the play and the theatre process and you know, like just really honour that. So this is only a recent thing because they've waited so long to before they've released it. But it's a whole different journey and, you know, it's a very different thing. Everyone, all the characters come to life. And, of course, Cynthia Erivo is a complete, adds another level of that conversation for me, which is about race, which she has absolutely interrogated. So, you know, it's a different story in a way, but the same bones.
Mm, that's extraordinary. Oh. Yeah, it was such curious news when that happened. Everyone thought, oh, why not Jodi? Why not Jodi? But then that piece about race, I think, is so prescient, and you know, it's very timely. It kind of reminds me a little bit of that Michaela Cole HBO series.
Yeah.
I May Destroy You. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, that came mm-hmm. out while I think we were in lockdown, didn't it, Justin? Because we were really aware of that at the time. I love that show, and I love Michaela as well. She's just such a star. I love her.
Oh, yes.
She does everything. She writes and she acts and she does the whole lot.
So. Yeah, and she's in Marvel movies now, too. So she's... Wait, so I'm thinking, I need you to just, Connor and I are a bit of Anglophiles. So there's this whole bit about when you're from Liverpool, you're called a Scouse.
Yeah. Yes.
So is it not, I've also heard the word Liverpudlian.
Yeah.
Is that something different?
Well, no, it's the same thing, isn't it? I mean, I think if you're a Scouse, your accent is Scouse. Where you wouldn't say, okay. Speak Liverpudlian, but but yeah, I mean, I know Jodi. Both Justin and I know Jodi's parents very well now because they've come to lots of events and they're just so much fun. But sometimes when she's with her family and they're all talking, honestly, I need subtitles as an Australian. I'm like, what? We're speaking
that's so funny,
and none of us can understand each other. So yeah, it's great.
That's amazing. Well, so we mentioned earlier theater can change the world and that ideal being instilled in both of you had to have happened at some point. And we like to sort of dig back to maybe the roots of when you had a moment that really affirmed where your path was leading you to work in the arts. And I know that Susie, you've had a bit of a broken road to the arts, but what we'd like to call it the Ring of Keys moment. And that's based on the musical Fun Home. For those listeners who have not heard our podcast before, you know, the song Ring of Keys, it's when young Allison identifies herself with someone and sees life in a new way that feels like it should have been that way all along.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, maybe we'll start with Justin since we've been exhausting Susie for a little bit. Do you have a Ring of Keys moment, Justin, where you realized that a life in the arts was one for you?
I think for me, it's always about stages. So the first one I remember was being in a geography class in year eight and then doing a presentation and the teacher coming up and saying, you should probably be doing theater. And have you thought about drama as a because I obviously did it in a very theatrical way. I can't remember what I did, but I'm sure it was. So I think that was probably the first one. And then I said to my mum, what's a person who makes things? And she said, I think that's an engineer. So I thought about being an engineer for a long time, and I did a lot of work experience with engineers. And then at the last minute before we had to, you know, I'm Australian as well. And at the last minute before I had to make a choice about what university preferences I was going to do, someone spoke to me at our final sort of graduation, and he said, what do you really want to do? And I said, I think I want to do theater. And he said, why not? And I said, well, there's no work in it. And he said, well, why not? And he sort of just kept interrogating me. At the end, I realized the reason was because I'd not selected the right course. So I moved across from there. And I don't know that the sort of connecting to audiences now and sort of making it relevant to the world has always been there, because I think it's how to have a conversation about what's going on. And that doesn't mean that there's not space for entertainment, because I think there is, but I think you've got to have both. I think you can also talk to the world, because the other phrase that Susie and I talk a lot about is how to get us off the arts pages, because I think theatre can sometimes get very self-inward looking, and I don't think a lot of the world cares when we get in those sort of conversations. So I think when we can talk beyond it, as shows like Fun Home do, you suddenly go, oh, it's talking to the world, and it's talking beyond our community. And I think that's when it gets, you know, gets special. So we've got to always try and get theatre off the arts pages, and we've got to try and, you know, naively make it change the world.
That's beautiful.
Was there a show or something that you saw at that age when you were in year eight or maybe sooner that you remember vividly being like, ooh, I love this?
I saw some show. I think I saw Big River or something when I was a kid, and I went with my grandmother, and she sung every song, and I remember being so embarrassed. So after that, I was like, musicals are not my thing. And then it took me until I did Billy Elliot to go, oh yeah, they are again, because I sort of started understanding the power of them. But I don't know. No, I don't particularly know. I didn't see a lot of theatre as a kid. I loved doing it and being around it and being in that community creating stuff because it was an intersection of people and ideas. But no, there wasn't a particular show. I remember, well, no, I spoke when I remember turning 19 and seeing Proof and thinking and absolutely having a massive crush on the actress in Australia, having never met her. And I was like, how can I have a crush on someone I've never met? And there was something just so intoxicating about that character. So maybe that was part of it. That was all, again, it's stages of a journey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Thank you for indulging us. Now, Susie, do you feel you had a moment?
Interesting. I have such a different story, but in ways it kind of connects to Justin's, which I never knew. And first of all, when I met Justin, I didn't even know he was Australian. We didn't get to that conversation.
I was English and Jenny was Russian. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I had no sense who anyone was, right? I thought I was somewhere else as well. But look, you know, it's so interesting because I grew up really working class where I never went to the theatre. I didn't have drama at my school at all. So I never knew anything about theatre except that when I was in year 10, I was asked to, I did ballet because I had really weird walking. So I did ballet as some sort of physiotherapy, but I loved the dance and I loved improvisation. But I remember in year 10, we had a visiting teacher that went to some disadvantaged schools and did some sort of English creative writing process with the kids. And she asked us to write a story that you can read onto a tape cassette and then bring the tape cassette in and we'll play them as stories and see how they hear. And I loved doing it so much with my tapes. I wrote it. I was a little actor then, obviously. I didn't realize that. And she loved what I did and said, oh, you know, you should be a writer, basically. But also said, and I thought I just loved audiences. And so that's why I ended up in law, probably. But interestingly, the show that there were two plays that really affected me, and one was Proof, because of course I have a science law background. So I never even knew that about Justin. But I remember thinking, they're talking about mathematics on stage. This is amazing. And so I loved that. But the other thing that I saw Far Side of the Moon by Robert Lepage, who I went on to work with many years later. But there's a staging at the end of that, and it's all about his mother dying. And it's, I don't know if people know it, but it's the most beautiful exploration of humanity and a reaching out about grief. And at the end, he does that. He's sitting at an airport. And he basically does this thing where he has a mirror and the sort of chairs of the airport, and he does this movement where it looks like he's walking in space. And I remember thinking, if you can make me believe you are walking on the moon on stage in live performance without anything but a mirror and a chair, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, which tells you, again, right back to the circular conversation I had with Justin, where he talked about those two events in the piece that we've in Prima Facie. And I thought, you get it. You've added something that is visceral and physical to words that say something, but you've amplified them with this beauty and with this really human gesture. And so I think it was the human gestures and the way that you can stage that and make it big and make it reach into people's hearts and touch them so that they actually do see something that they might not have seen before. And I remember that moment with Robert Lepage thinking, I want to make that. That's what I want to do. And so I think that was the end of my law degree, my law career right then in that moment without realizing it.
Wow. Wow. Thank you for sharing. Just because we're running on time here now, Justin, I've got to ask about The Inheritance. It's one of my favorite plays. Were you involved with it from its first mounting, or did you jump in later?
The first workshop of it, we did a workshop when it was still at the first theatre that commissioned it, because Matthew had been taking it around trying to find a theatre to do it and someone to commission it, and nobody did. And then a woman called Elizabeth Williamson and the theatre she's working at took it on. And so we did a workshop. And at the time, the thought was from that theatre was, oh, we just want to do part one, see how it goes, and then we'll do part two. And Stephen and I came to this week workshop and went, no, you've got to do it all in one go or nothing. And then it sort of went through various iterations. So, yeah, at that time, it was the first half was 5-6 hours and the second half was 8. We tried to read the second half in a day. And we had to skip bits because we needed to get to Margaret, who's the character who comes at the end. We're like, oh, this poor actress has been waiting around all day and we're not going to get to her. So we had to skip the middle of it. And obviously it came down to be just over 3 in a bit on both. But yeah, it was an amazing, even that first workshop. You went, there's something special here. And I remember Stephen, the director, talking to me and telling me, who I've worked with Stephen for a long time, but he's telling me about an experience about being in New York City as a young man and the choices that he had to make. And if he'd stayed in the city at that time, then he may not be with us today. And I was profoundly moved by the idea that somebody who's been a mentor and a friend for a long time would might not be in my life. And so we just had to do it.
Wow. It was so great. I mean, I remember finishing part one and seeing into the audience men crying their eyes out, so moved by the piece. Actually, as we're talking about it, reminds me of something that happens at the end of Prima Facie. So anyway, interesting. Yeah,
little tease.
But a bit like Prima Facie. I mean, both of them, the thing that I want to sort of get across is that they're also wildly entertaining. Like The Inheritance was really funny, but it did really, and I think Prima Facie has that same, it uses, Susie so cleverly uses humor and levity to find a way to talk about things. So it's not just a dour conversation, actually. It's a really riveting, exciting conversation. And yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, that moment, and I've only ever felt that in New York, into those two plays, where you have a collective sense of, I suppose The Inheritance is about grief or inherited grief. And Prima Facie is similar in that way. And it is so humbling to be involved in shows that are able to connect people to that and make them feel, have a collective experience of that, in the hope that the shared experience makes us better. Because there is a community out there that's, you know, that we are a part of. And sometimes it's very hard to feel a part of a community in the world today.
Yeah, for sure.
That's beautiful. Susie, you mentioned you got to eventually work with Robert Lepage.
Oh, yeah.
And we also have in here that, which I didn't put this in your bio, but I find it fascinating. You were mentored by the great Edward Albee.
It was amazing. Because you're in Yorkins, right? So you know Yorkins. Gosh.
What was that? What were some of the big takeaways from being under his tutelage?
You know, there were some really amazing things. He was a really, really, really brilliant man, like a very, very fine brain. He was quite elderly by the time I was mentored by him. Mm-hmm. And I came to New York and spent quite a lot of time with him and in his apartment, where he has had the most incredible artwork hanging on the walls that I just assumed were like prints and they're all originals. There was a Picasso in his bathroom door. And the takeaways for me were a few things. One is, he said, you know, like, playwrights need to know that it's also literature, that you own the copyright and you need to hang on to that for dear life, because it means that no one else gets to change your words but you. And there was something quite, like, you didn't realize that Scream was different in that way until I went into Scream. And then the other thing was, he used to talk about taking a metaphorical dog for a metaphorical walk on a metaphorical beach and have your ideas. Like, that's how you let your ideas dream, and then really gather it in your mind before you actually put pen to paper. Really gather what you want to do. And for me, it was the first time anyone had spoken about the way that I write, which is basically just to sort of really get the guts of it happening in my head in that first line, like the first line of Prima Facie, which is actually Thoroughbreds. Like, that happened, and then I went, right, now I can write the play. And, you know, it was because of that advice from Edward, if I really think back, because he said, just take your time, because you can write it quickly once it's all coalesced in your head. And that's very true, actually. So that was the second thing. And the third thing was that I remember he was so fabulous, you know, at 89, a gay man in Sydney, Australia, with his hearing aid and everything. And I said, you know, how have you coped since the death of your partner? And his partner was 15 years younger than him and had died of cancer. So he was an artist. And he said, yeah, I'm doing okay, but, you know, I'm not dating yet. And I thought, wow, there's so much optimism in that statement for an 89-year-old gay man. And I went, good for you. Like, you really know, yeah, there's real possibilities ahead for you. And there were, he went on to write things before he passed away that were, you know, did very well. But it was just his own person. And he had this great story where he talked about him and Tennessee Williams, how they used to go to each other's opening night and there'd be a little word or a little phrase in each of their plays that was just for each other. And they had to, there was like an expedition where you had to find the line that was for you, that would make you laugh or smile or have a wry kind of like insight into their lives. And I wish I'd asked him what they were. That's my only regret. I think I wish I'd known. I said, tell me what they are, because I was just, what a great idea. That's so cool. But yeah, he was an incredible man and he had a big impact on me, actually. So, you know, all credit to him.
Oh, that's really special. That's, oh my goodness. Thank you for passing on those little nuggets that he shared with you as well. Wow, the two of you, you know, I was nervous at the beginning. Now I just feel like I'm with old friends. Like, I just feel like the two of you have just made this experience so wonderful, because although the subject matter, there's a bit of a content warning before the play and everything, the way that the two of you were able to deliver that message and even speak about it today has been so refreshing and so optimistic, and showing that the change can really come from the art that you're putting out there in the world. So thank you both so much. And our listeners on Drama are going to absolutely adore the two of you.
I know. I feel like we're sadly wrapping up here, but before we say goodbye, we do like to end on a dose of drama, a little something to leave our listeners with. The drama that's been on your heart and your mind, it could be something you've been binge watching, something you want to promote, rant about, rave about, just share and put out into the world. And my dose of drama is more of like a question here, because as I'm going through, you know, both of your careers and your bios that Dylan read up here, I have got to ask about The Crown, Justin, because how many episodes did you direct?
I worked on season one and two.
The Claire Foy years.
Claire Foy years. Yeah, Stephen and I worked on that together. And that, yeah, it feels like a distant memory now, but it was a sort of brilliant, exciting time, because we were really figuring out what the show was and how to tell this crazy story. And it was a bit further away from us, so it was not living memory for a lot of people.
Yeah. Did they know that they were going to do like different queens in multiple seasons at that time, or were they kind of just like, we're going to make season one and see where this goes?
No, there had always been a conversation that at some point you'd have to shift queens just for age. And we knew that every season was going to be about a decade.
Very cool. I loved it. I loved Claire. She was amazing. And then she comes in and she guest stars in like season three or four, and she nabs up an Emmy, a guest Emmy, for like that one little scene.
Claire Foy is a genius. We love Claire.
We do love her.
I love her so much. But anyway, thank you for your contribution to The Crown. I think you're doing one more season, right? I think. Dylan would probably know.
Go back to do the last episode. And I'm not involved, because I've got enough on at the moment. But he's doing one. He's doing the last episode of the series.
No pressure. That's incredible. My dose of drama is inspired by a conversation that Justin and I were having before we started recording. I have a book recommendation for anybody who's looking to read a little celebrity memoir this summer. Australian drag superstar Courtney Act.
Oh, she's amazing. I love her.
So amazing, right? She wrote a beautiful memoir called Caught in the Act, and it talks about coming into her own as a superstar. It is funny. It is heartwarming. It's educational. And it now makes me want to visit Sydney and come to Australia at some
Please
point.
Come to Sydney. Please come. I can show you all around.
We'll need a tour guide for sure. I know. I can't believe we've never been, Dylan.
Yeah, come on down. It's a 23-hour flight.
Oh, just a little jump over. I've got Sydney on the brain now. I'm like, I can't believe I missed World Pride in Sydney, you know.
I know. And it was amazing. Like, it was just great, great time in Sydney. Sydney just came alive, and it was post-COVID. It was brilliant. But my little plugs are, right now I'm in rehearsal for my next play, Jail Baby, which is about a young boy who goes to prison and it's an interrogation of the prison system. But my other thing is that I was just obsessed with the dialogue writing in Sixth Session and the last season. So I've been binging and going back and looking at things and thinking, I want to read the script now. And of course I know Sarah Snook because she's Australian, and so just watching her in action. And
I haven't watched it yet, no spoilers.
Okay. I was going to say, I predicted who came out ahead at the end, but not in the way it happened. So I thought that was interesting. But especially the newsroom episode, my husband and I were on different continents at the time, and he'd watched it just before me, and I got a text going, I've just watched it and I feel ill. And I thought, oh, wow, why? And then when I watched it, I went, me too. Like, is this really possible? So it was just too realistic for words. But so I've loved watching that. And I'm in rehearsals, so that's why I'm a bit bleary-eyed and sleeping in a bit too much. And, you know, then back over to London to work again with Justin, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, I did not realize there was going to be another collaboration.
We've got a couple of ideas kicking around. My dose of drama is a book that I'm reading, and I'm about halfway through it, called Shaggy Bane by Douglas Stewart.
Ah.
Amazing.
It's terrific.
That central character is unbelievable. I just think
mm-hmm. yeah Booker Prize winning.
Yeah, for his debut novel, right?
That's right. And people have been talking about it for so long. And it's like unbelievable to finally actually read it. And she's so intoxicating as a character.
Mm-hmm. It's, I believe it's going to be adapted for some.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, listen.
Whoa.
You two are fabulous. Thank you so much for your work on this play, but also for this amazing conversation. I just want the best for you both. Best of luck at the Tonys on Sunday. I think Jodie's going to win. My prediction is Jodie's winning.
I hope so.
Fingers crossed.
I hope so. We really hope so. Oh. She deserves it.
She really does.
Our amazing design team. I mean, they're all phenomenal. We were just lucky with that group of people. Who would not?
They're like family now. Yeah, it's so amazing.
Again, it's like getting our mates together and having a good time, which I wish all theatre was like that. And it often is, but you know, that was really such an extraordinary experience.
And now you're getting the band back together for something. So we'll see what
happens. I don't know what you're talking about.
a little
well, Justin,
drama.
Sweet dreams. And Susie, good morning.
Coffee time.
If you're on social media, where can people find you?
Oh, good question. I'm on Instagram. It's Susie Miller Writer. Justin?
I don't know what mine is, but yeah, I'm somewhere there.
We'll put it in the notes below. And of course, if everyone can go and see Prima Facie, it's running through end of June, early July here in New York City, and soon to be a film. And there's so much more to come. Thank you both for your time. And everyone who's listening, be sure to follow us at The Drama Podcast. Leave a little rating and a review. And Connor is at Connor McDowell. I am at Dylan McDowell. Thank you, Justin and Susie. This has been such a delight. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.